Hello, I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today is Dr. Marie Tiart, who is a pediatric orthopedic surgeon based at Stellenbosch University and Tygerberg Hospital in Cape Town, South Africa. She is one of the founding members of SAFOS, the South African Female Orthopedic Surgeon Society. She is also the president of the International Orthopedic Diversity Alliance, IODA. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Dr. Tiart, you are our first orthopedic surgeon to feature on the show, and we'll get into the details of why that is in terms of representation of females a little later in the discipline. To begin with, can you briefly tell us about the role of an orthopedic surgeon and the systems of the body that you specialize in?
Right. So orthopedic surgeons essentially treat bone and joint conditions, and mostly surgically. So we do sometimes manage things conservatively with some pain medication and injections and things like that. But in general, we are the surgeons. And the kind of things that we treat include fractures and dislocations, so anything trauma-related that affects the bones and joints, as well as more chronic conditions like osteoarthritis, bone infections, anything to do with the bones and joints, essentially.
Are there any orthopedic conditions that women are potentially more at risk from?
So I think the most common one that I would say is osteoporosis. So that's when your bone density starts to decrease in life. And the problem with that is you are then prone to fragility fractures. So that means hip fractures, vertebral column fractures from simple falls. And the reason why women are at risk for this is it's hormonal reasons essentially linked to estrogen. And as the estrogen slowly starts to decrease post-menopause, that is when you're at risk for decreasing of your bone density and thus these fractures.
Thinking ahead for younger women to kind of look at preventative options, what should we be doing? And is there any lifestyle modifications that we should be applying now to kind of lessen those risks of osteoporosis in later life?
Yes. So your bone density peaks, and I hate to say this, at the age of 30. So you have to be doing everything essentially before that so that you can start with the best bone density you can have. And this would include low impact exercise as a young person, as well as you can give yourself some supplementations like vitamin D in combination with calcium and phosphate. And essentially, if you start with a great bone density, it will help slow down the process of the osteoporosis. Again, there are some genetic factors. So not every woman is going to get severe osteoporosis. And we're not always sure why that is. But for instance, Caucasian women are far more prone to osteoporosis than Black females. After 30, all is not lost. I would say the best thing to do is to continue improving your muscle bulk, because if your muscles are nice and strong, even just with low impact exercise afterwards, the muscles will help to prevent the fracture when you fall, right? So if the muscles can help protect the bone and cushion your fall, the better long term for you.
So it's really important looking after yourself earlier on in life to have these preventative options for later in the future.
Exactly.
Please tell us, what drew you to specifically focus on orthopedic surgery as opposed to other specialities in medicine?
Okay, so orthopedics is a lot of it's a lot of geometry. So I enjoyed mathematics at school. So one part of it is figuring out angles, and if you correct certain amounts of angle, then you're going to correct the deformity, let's say, that the person has in their legs, if they've got a bowed leg, for example. So that was the one thing is I really enjoyed mathematics. The other part of it is we often treat patients and cure them. So there's this instant gratification of, this bone is broken, you fixed it, the patient walks out. You're not managing a condition, for example, like diabetes, right, which you can't cure. And I find that really appealing. I'm obviously a millennial, you know, so instant gratification is important. But that is always so satisfying when somebody that maybe came in, you know, really injured after a car accident, you fix their bones and they're walking out, you know, a few days later. That is very rewarding.
For patients too.
Yeah.
Walk us through a typical day in the life of being an orthopedic surgeon.
Okay, so it's obviously will be different for everyone. I work in an academic hospital in a tertiary referral center. So we are a major trauma center. We get referrals from all the smaller hospitals in our region. And again, even if you work in an academic hospital, it's not necessarily the same day as what we have. But we essentially start at 7:30 with a team meeting. So everybody in our department meets. And we discuss a clinical case, and each sort of subspecialty gets a turn. And then we discuss all the patients that were admitted the day before. So we discuss what we call the intake list. And then we discuss our trauma board, i.e. all the patients waiting for trauma operations. And then essentially each subspecialty will go on to do what their sort of daily tasks are. And that in general for an orthopedic surgeon is either a theater list or it is a clinic where you're seeing patients that have been referred to you, and then you're either managing them, observing them, or also listing them for a future operation. Because I'm in an academic hospital, this is then interlaced with teaching. So I have medical students that I have to give tutorials on or that join me for ward rounds, etc. And we've got trainees that are specializing in orthopedics that you're also training on the job, essentially. And then once our clinic or our theater day is done, this is how my day runs. I then do a walk through our pediatric ward with our intern and just discuss any problems and just see sort of our post-ops or plan, what is the next day going to hold, etc.
Medicine is one of those fields which is evolving all the time. Can you share some of the exciting advancements or innovations that you're most interested in?
So orthopedics is definitely advancing very quickly, but I think from a female specific stance, industry is realizing that the female surgeons are very different from the male surgeons, especially in the fields of arthroscopy. So when we're doing knee scopes or shoulder scopes, so when we're sticking cameras into the joints and having a look around, and arthroplasty, i.e. knee and hip replacements. So industry has been asking female surgeons to help design the instruments to fit our smaller hands, our smaller frames, because often when you start out in arthroscopy, the tools are made for men with bigger hands, and often you cannot reach all the buttons on the instrument because your hands are smaller. So industry is finally recognizing that this is a problem, and are helping to design instruments accordingly, which is really exciting.
That's great. And staying with that stream of thought, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges that female orthopedic surgeons face?
I think many of us struggle with the balance of being tough, because it is a difficult it's a difficult speciality, as well as the culture currently is very male dominated. So there has to be this balance between being tough and being caring at the same time, because often if you are tough, you might be deemed to be a little bit more difficult and more masculine like. I don't know, you know. Whereas if you seem too caring, you seem too weak and more too feminine. So there's this fine balance between being sort of showing that you mean business and professional and you know what you're doing in this job while still caring for your patients. And that is a it's a difficult balance that I think a lot of us face.
It's interesting you say that. I think one of the biggest or most popular books was with Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In. And I remember reading aspects where one of the things she said, it's like if a man behaves in a certain way, so I think one of the examples was he looks like the boss. If a woman behaves in the same way, the interpretation is she's bossy. So it's these behaviors which are identical. But it's the perception on the other side of how someone is seeing you, which is completely illogical.
Yeah, absolutely. But that is definitely the same in orthopedics. So you have to find that balance, right? Where you come across as the boss without appearing bossy. And it's not easy. It's definitely not easy.
You mentioned in the day of a typical day that everyone go, you have your boards and people go off and do their different specializations. You've got a particular interest in bone and joint infections, cerebral palsy, and limb reconstruction. So really looking at the pediatric side of things. Can you share with us a memorable patient success story which has had a significant impact on you?
So this is such a difficult question because I treat so many kids with these severe conditions from really impoverished backgrounds. So I can't single out one child, but seeing the difference that you make for them and their families' lives makes it all worth it, right? So they've all got different goals, right? And often the especially with kids, you can imagine with cerebral palsy in an impoverished background where they're living in a tin shack. And they're not going to have an access to a car, and they're not going to have access to sort of daily physio and OT and et cetera. Often that goal for them is just to be able to change that child's nappy more comfortably. So it's amazing that even these small little things that you can offer them makes a huge difference to this family. I think I have a particular sort of soft spot for children with bone and joint infections, and we have many cases of those. And they can be really ill, as in every year we have at least one or two children that lose their lives to bone infection. And so for those that we see that have been in ICU for a pr extended period of time and then had a prolonged time in the hospital, when you see that child walking into your clinic for follow-up, that is just, it makes it all worth it because it's amazing to see the contrast, right, of this child that was so ill. These children get so ill and they are in such a catabolic state in their bodies, right, their metabolism, that they almost start looking like children with cancer. That is how much weight loss they get. That's how weak they appear. That's how sort of apathetic they become. And so when you see them, you know, let's say at the 6 week mark after you've discharged them and they walk in and they look like a totally different child, it's amazing.
It must be a really rewarding effect from your side of things of seeing how you make a meaningful impact in people's lives.
Yes, definitely. I think that's what has drawn me and kept me in our government hospital or the state sector is that although, you know, in our private sector, you could be earning a lot of money and being very, very comfortable financially, the pathology that you see in private sector is not quite as challenging as in the state or government sector. And the impact that you have is also so much more in the state sector. So every day for me is a new sort of challenge regarding sometimes you have to think out of the box, sometimes it's something you've never seen before. And I think that's what makes my job really exciting is that every day is not the same.
You're listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and today we're talking to Dr. Marie Tiart, who is a pediatric orthopedic surgeon based at Stellenbosch University and Tygerberg Hospital in Cape Town. Dr. Tiart, you are a member of several organizations, such as the South African Pediatric Orthopedic Surgeons, South African Limb Lengthening and Reconstruction Society, South African Academy of Childhood Disability. You're also a member of the American Academy for Cerebral Palsy and Development Medicine, the Ruth Jackson Orthopedic Society, and the International Orthopedic Diversity Alliance, IODA, where you serve as the president of this global organization. Touching in on one organization, so perhaps IODA, can you tell us what the organization aims to achieve, what its ambitions are, and its purpose of being?
So essentially, IODA was founded by a group of past presidents of different organizations, as well as other key leaders that felt that orthopedics lacks diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And they felt that this is a problem on a global scale. So they created IODA as a champion, essentially, of diversity, trying to create a network of like-minded people that are advocating for diversity and inclusion in orthopedics, no matter where you are in the world. So we have really done a lot of work, and our footprint has really increased over the last few years. We've got industry backing and sponsorship, which has helped us propel our cause forward. We offer different webinars looking at parenting in orthopedics and how you can improve the diversity in your specific area. We have got symposiums at different conferences, depending on where. So we've been the last one we were at was the American Academy meeting, which was in February. But we have been invited to the European Federation of Orthopedics and Trauma, and to CCOT, which is the Society for Orthopedics and Trauma. So there's a lot of different symposiums and webinars that we host. And our latest sort of project that we are busy developing is a global mentoring program, which you can imagine is quite a feat to try and get that off the ground. But we are busy in process with that, which is really good. And we have been working on what we call the IODA Charter, which is essentially a document that any association in orthopedics or subspecialty can sign, that declaring that they will work on their diversity in their sphere. So it's like a promise, essentially, that that you identify that diversity is important, and that you are going to take steps to try and improve that diversity. So with that, we're also going to, with time, give them these societies tools on how to improve diversity and belonging. So, you know, and we get this kind of information from different societies where there has been improvement in their diversity and inclusion.
Who is membership open to?
So anyone that's interested in orthopedics, so from medical students to our trainees, and if you're a consultant already. We also have industry. So if you are somebody in the orthopedic industry sphere, you can also join IODA. And membership is currently free. We have a lot of resources, once you remember, on our website regarding different type of diversity articles. All our webinars are on there as well. And, you know, it's we have a quarterly newsletter with what is happening in orthopedics in the sort of diversity sphere.
And I'd imagine with the type of initiatives that you've got in place, and I mean, just given the name of the Diversity Alliance, that is it about welcoming, including people from diverse backgrounds, diverse cultures, different demographies, to grow and make the orthopedics let's say, fraternity more representative of a global population.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. It's also about identifying in your certain area, what is the diversity profile, right? Where is there lacking? Because obviously it differs from Sweden to Senegal, you know? And we're not just looking at gender, you know, or race. It's also about sexual orientation, just differences in people, sort of globally, as in anything that you could think of as diverse, that is what we're interested in. So this is not just a gender thing or just a race thing. It's people as a whole.
As someone who sits and is very active on a lot of these associations and organizations, what would you say have been some of the opportunities that you've been exposed to from being involved in them?
So I think what's important about being involved is that, number one, you have a voice and a seat at the table. So my initial work at Sapphos has definitely, that sort of helped me for when our main organization, so the South African Orthopedic Association, so that's for all orthopedic surgeons, when they were recruiting more board members, I think having a Sapphos arm helped sort of with visibility, and that helped me get onto the board at the SOA, which I think for me, because that's our main board with all our members, it represents everyone. I think having more women on that board is really important, as representation for our gender. Equally, we need representation for race and, you know, sexual orientation. But in general, with South Africa and our apartheid history, I think race representation has definitely improved, and visually that's definitely evident. But gender has been lacking because we've been concentrating on race diversity. So I think that having a Sapphos and the IOTA background has helped me be able to sit on the SOA board, which is really where the sort of decisions get made, right? So that has allowed me to have a seat at that table. And I find it quite, it's really, I'm not saying this was like my doing, but the first woman sat on the SOA Exco in, I think 2020 was the first woman ever on that board.
4 years ago.
Yes. And that the society has been around for at least 60 years, I would say, 60 or 70 years. However, since her seat, I was then the next one, and we've subsequently got two more. So we now have four women on the board, which is obviously a huge leap from where we were, you know, back, well, even early 2000. So I think the visibility of being able to sit on boards like this then encourages others to apply for these seats, and to really realize that their voice matters and is important, and that people are going to listen. So I think that's important. Obviously, part of our associations, similar to our SOA, which gives out research grants if you apply, which obviously helps, and thus you know, gives you some money to travel to different centers. IOTA similarly has a connection or an agreement with industry, Zimmer being one of the particular ones, who gives us a seat for one of their residence programs and allows us then to send one of our members fully paid to one of their, you know, sort of courses, which I think is obviously really a great opportunity. So I think it's important that if you are, you know, if you're looking at these things, you must think big picture regarding the opportunity to network, the opportunity to be able to possibly win a travel grant, And then that will lead to more networking.
The take up that I'm getting, if you don't raise your hand, if you don't apply for membership, even if it's free, you are missing out on these opportunities. So become members of associations in your fields, because you have opportunities that are there and can take you places.
Exactly, exactly.
Staying with the aspect of associations and delving into the reason why you are the first orthopedic surgeon to be on our show is that I'd read that there are only 5% of orthopedic surgeons in South Africa that are female. And you'd shared offline that this is a similar trend across the globe. So as a founding member of the South African Female Orthopedic Surgeons Society, SAFOS, tell us why you conceptualized the society, how it developed, what do you want it to achieve?
Yeah, so I felt, okay, I think this is how it sort of started, right? Is when I was a trainee, there were very few women before me in my university. I was the third one at Stellenbosch to qualify, and I finished in 2015. So there weren't many women before me. And then I went to Southampton in the UK for a pediatric orthopedic fellowship. And I arrived there and there were loads more women. There were at least three female orthopedic consultants, and there were loads of female trainees. So it wasn't sort of strange to see a female orthopod. And I just really liked the way that they carried themselves with confidence without being pushy. They didn't seem defensive about why they were orthopods. You know, they were just themselves and just sort of quietly confident. And I thought, and they taught me so much in that year that I was there. And so I felt that I needed to give back. I needed to sort of also take someone under my wing, etc. And when we started looking at the numbers, we were getting loads of women that were pre-training, like what we call a medical office in orthopedics, super excited. You know, they're keen to do orthopedics. And then when we look at our trainee numbers, it dwindles a little bit. And then when we look at the final consultant numbers, that's even lower. So we've got a large attrition rate. And I felt that it was probably or partly because maybe they didn't feel supported. Maybe they didn't, you know, they needed a mentor or someone who's been through it, etc. So I thought having a society for ourselves would be great, because people would have a safe space to sort of discuss things and we could mentor each other and learn from each other, etc. So it is a society that's open for anyone interested in orthopedics, including medical students. We have run a few webinars on like pregnancy and work-life balance, and recent one we did now was on interview skills, which was really well received. And slowly, so this society was initially met with a little bit of resistance from the SOA as a organization, sort of wondering why the women want to break off and separate, which is not quite what we were meaning, right? But over the years now, I think they've realized that we are more about nurturing our members and trying to mentor them versus planning a coup. So we now have a regular session at our SOA annual conference. We have a whole sort of afternoon where SAFOS can arrange whatever we want to talk about. And I must say, I don't want to always push the gender narrative. Sometimes it's important for us to actually be the ones that advocate for the soft skills. How do you negotiate? How do you influence? How do you collaborate? How do you deal with conflict? And so for this year, for instance, we're doing no big gender discussions. We're going to be talking more about soft skills and how we're going to sort of give a medical legal scenario for ethics points, and then we're going to work in sort of teaching the soft skills. And even though we are only 5% of the total population of orthopods, we actually get quite a lot of buy-in and men coming to listen to our session, and every year it grows. So I think it's important to understand that change and culture change is going to happen slowly, and you need to be patient. And You just need to slowly move that needle. And I think perhaps the way we've gone about it without, sort of not sort of arriving with pitchforks and being all, I think that's helped. I think our sort of subtle entry as an association and focusing more on ourselves and what we are doing versus worrying about what other people are doing, I think has helped us gain respect, if that makes sense. So it's very exciting. I don't think we do everything right, to be honest. I think that we have a lot to learn and a lot to still grow, but our membership grows sort of every month with a few members, and I think we're over sort of 90 members now, which is a lot if you think about the total number of orthopedic women. But yeah, so that's why I felt that Sophos was so important. And of course, we leant on a lot of what had happened in America. So they've got the Ruth Jackson, which is essentially a little bit of what we've modeled on, that has had huge success. And we are definitely not quite there yet, but that's sort of goals, right? Is to eventually be quite the powerhouse that they are.
Fantastic achievement. And what I love about this is that you've created this, seeing that there was a gap, seeing the benefits that you'd experienced in Southampton. And it's this space where there is a collective where people can get together who are like-minded, like-gendered. And I always think that when you've got that, it provides this opportunity of cohesion. So you can drive a movement forward as opposed to have lots of individuals all, sprouting out into their directions. But this just offers that vehicle to take things forward for change. So well done.
No, exactly. I think the strength is in the numbers, right? One voice.
You've chatted about mentorship as being a really important tool, and I see that in a lot of different organizations and industries too. Can you tell us about some of the female role models in your life and how they've impacted on you?
Yeah, so I had to think about this one. It's a difficult one because I think there were so few women before me, right? But I think the most recent one that really impacted my life is Christy Webber. So she is the first AAOS female president. And she was essentially present virtually at our SAOA annual meeting when it was essentially given an opportunity to discuss the inception of Sophos. So I had to. And when I'm looking back now, I'm not quite sure why I had to publicly announce this, but maybe it was a good thing. But it was met with really mixed emotions, right? About the woman wanting a society separate from SAOA, etc. So this public sort of declaration, she was now privy to this. And after that, I'd never met her, person, and I didn't know her personally, but she was a real. She was a real source of comfort and advice and strength regarding carry on with this. Don't shy away from it now. You've put your voice out there. You've said you're going to do this. You need to do this, etc. And she is just a great leader. She was also president of IOTA a few years ago. So I've worked very closely with her, and she is really someone that has struck that balance of being tough and caring at the same time. She's an incredible leader and someone that I've really lent to for advice.
And what's wonderful is that she's tangible, she's touchable, she's still around, that you've been able to draw off of her influence and to make your life easier. We're coming towards the latter part of the show. And in this section, I ask all my guests about some of the factors that they feel have contributed to their success. Some people speak about faith or a particular person in their life or an event that was momentous. Can you tell us about some of the key drivers to your success?
So I think for me, what's really important is resilience. I think resilience is really important, being able to pick yourself up again if you have a disappointment or you get knocked down. And I think I think why we have been so successful is the reason that you do something is important. And I think it shouldn't be a self-centered reason. So when I started Sapphos, it was not about me. And often I try and shy away from, I try and give somebody else the podium, or I try and let somebody else introduce the speaker, or et cetera, because this is not about me. This is about, if you're doing something for other people, it often, the door then opens for you, but it allows you then to help pull them through that door, right? So I think that's why we have been so successful, is that I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing it for everybody else. That makes me sound really like
very
arrogant. I don't mean it to sound arrogant.
No. You're sounding Simon Sinek and purpose driven.
Yeah, so I think that's what I do this for, is I realize that I think the other thing that I said once in a webinar that I think really sort of stuck is, if you are a brave person, you need to be brave for those that can't be. And I think that is why you need to, it's important, if you feel strongly about a cause or something, join that association, be that brave voice for those that aren't as brave as you to speak up. And I think that is what's made everything that we've done regarding improvement in numbers, improvement in diversity, etc. I think that's where the success has come from.
What legacy would you like to leave?
So I would hope for a more inclusive culture of orthopedics for everyone, no matter what gender, sexual orientation, race, etc. So that's what I would hope for, is that the orthopedic culture that I started with is not how it ends. Yeah.
That's a fantastic thought, so substantive and meaningful. And lastly, as we close out today's conversation, can you share a few words of inspiration or motivation that you'd like to pass on to girls and women in the continent that are listening to us?
Okay, so I think whatever your talents are, do not waste them. So if something comes naturally to you, it's probably a sign that this is what you should be doing with your life. So if believe in yourself that these are talents that are going to sort of plan your future life, number one. Number two, I think it's important to look for allies that can help open the doors if it's difficult. And I definitely had allies in my life. So the current president of the SAOA was sitting on the presidential line in 2020 when I stood up and declared that we were going to create Sapphos. And he was really instrumental in being in my corner and sort of, you know, helping me from the male perspective. So I think it's important, especially if you're in an area where there are no supportive women or women in general, find an ally that can help you sort of get to where you want to go. And they are there. You just need to open your eyes.
Great message. No one is an island. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure chatting to you, hearing about the developments in the field and the encouraging aspect that more women are being included into the mix of orthopedic surgeons.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and we have been talking to Dr. Marie Tiart, who is a pediatric orthopedic surgeon based at Stellenbosch University and Tygerberg Hospital. She is the founding member of Sapphos, and she is the president of IODA.